Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And this is kind of a milestone. It's episode number 350, and I'm broadcasting to you live out of Central Kentucky. This is Stephen Zimmer with you tonight, and tonight I will be joined by the lovely, the vivacious, the wonderful Holly Phillippe. And Holly should be on, I hope. Okay, it's trying to log you in on the board, Holly, but hold on, let me see if I can get this thing to shift over here real quick. All right, hold on. No, I know you did, and I can hear you, but it's, oh man, already an adventure. Hold on, Holly. Yeah, it's giving me fits here. We'll get you in here. I hope so. Oh yes, technical issues right off the bat, folks. Yeah, no, I did. And it's got the spinning circle where, you know, it says turn your mic, you know, where the mic gets turned on. So yeah, I'm doing my best here to try to log you in, Holly. But it's being very obstinate at the moment. Try calling back in. Let's be cautious about this, and we'll get you on here. Because we have lots of good news, folks. It's going to be a great night. We have a fantastic guest coming up here in just a little bit. And but first, you know, we're going to go over some news and adventures and all that kind of good stuff. And, yeah, I definitely want Holly to be aboard to share this news with you. So. Yeah, again, yeah, this is, yeah, again, a milestone night, episode number 350, and it just seems like it does not want to log you in, Holly. There. Oh, my God, it did. Oh, there you are. Okay. it's fighting me tonight. There you are. We've got you. I hear you.
I am here.
Yes, you are on the air now. Live shows, folks. It's always an adventure here. And that is not the biggest adventure we had this week, folks. We've been very fired up this week. Yeah, we had a fire in the kitchen, Holly and I did, on Monday night. So, yeah, Holly managed to start a grease fire. And it's like Holly was starting a Kiss concert in the kitchen. It was awesome. I mean, the smoke everywhere, flame about 6 feet high, green and orange, red flame. Yeah, the green was what made me, it felt eerie because the green, yeah, from the grease fire. That's like, oh, my God. And so, yes, we can laugh about it now. Everybody is fine. But, please check your extinguishers.
Check your fire extinguishers. Ours would not fire, it just went on and on. I used all the salt I had to throw on the fire, and that's what finally, you know, died it down. It was actually, the flames were down when the firemen actually got in here, but they sprayed the floor and everything anyway with water.
Right.
I had poured some water on the floor too, but they sprayed it down. And then they had a machine that they put in our dining room that sucked out the smoke. The back deck. Mm-hmm. So me and Steven only got minor smoke inhalation because, well, I was trying to put the fire out with everything I had that I knew. I knew I couldn't put flour. I knew I couldn't throw water on it. It's grease fire. So yeah, it just got out of hand real quick. And, and we worried about the cats. So I was on the phone 911. We're trying to find the cats. They ran downstairs where there wasn't no smoke and, they hid. So we went ahead outside because I heard the fire trucks. So So, you know,
well,
if I knew they were right here, I mean, they were
well, we stepped
wet.
Out. Yeah, I stayed down with the cats, but they were underneath a big, heavy couch that I would have to actually just go for broke and flip if there was smoke downstairs, if there was fire. But the fire trucks were pulling up to the cows, and there was no smoke or anything downstairs yet. So I just stepped outside. Fire folks came right inside, and there you have it. So everything worked fine there from there.
We have a nice little coating of black soup particles everywhere on everything.
Yeah.
So I'm literally 2 days in now because I have to do a little at a time because of my fibromyalgia and my back and everything. And then I've got, you know, Imaginarium stuff to do. We have the show tonight. I just quit cleaning in the living room like right before the show. So it's crazy. I'm have to do walls. I had to pull curtains. I'm have to wipe off our little Nicky Nacks, the furniture, the cabinets. I mean, it's insane where all that smoke goes. And so, it's probably going to take me well into Monday before we
it's on there. I mean, if you walked in our house and in our living room, I mean, you actually would look and you wouldn't know that we had a fire. You'd smell the but I mean, looking at everything, you won't see it. I mean, it's not like you walk in and everything's covered in black. No, it's not.
You're actually
you wouldn't even know that it's there if you look close. But
you
But I mean, if you were just walking in the house and looking up, I mean, it doesn't look covered in black suit or something like that.
Not until you wipe the wall.
It's not like
and
that.
And when you wipe the wall, it's like holy crap. You know, it's just black and.
Yeah,
and I have COPD.
It's there. There's some residue.
I can't breathe in that crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't get downstairs. It didn't get to a couple areas
Thank
in the front
God.
Top level. But it hit the kitchen and living room and dining room that we have. And so, there's a bit of a,
and
bit
the
of a cleanup. But
and
the main
the
thing
office.
Is,
I had to
yes,
do the office.
We had Murphy's Law, so... the extinguisher wouldn't work, and then our first attempt to call 911. I mean, I've got the documentation on that call too. Over a minute, and nobody picked up. Literally calling 911 for a minute straight, and nobody picks up. I was like, oh my God, what? You know, everything can go wrong is going wrong.
Third ring.
Yeah, so they got that. So it was what fun. But yes, folks, that's life in our world. We never have a dull moment. But this week, we had something much bigger and more wonderful to announce on Monday. But I'm going to save that for last because last week for Imaginarium was great, and we had some new panelists and new spotlighted guests. I'm going to give you a scoop on a big one tonight, and it's great. And I just received from editor Sandy Lender, the Marathonarium final edited short stories for Imaginarium's first ever anthology release. Those that just came over final for formatting. So it's not going to be long before we will have release information on the Marathonarium anthology that features a number of Imaginarium author attendees. And it's going to be great. Proceeds from it will go to support the convention, which is always a plus. So please get a copy. Help us out because we are making progress with the convention. And so I'm going to go over a few guests with you, and then we're going to save the big one for last because that's our guest of honor. And some of you did see the announcement, but for those that didn't, we welcomed some new panelists aboard. Leah Pugh, Jim D. Gillantine, and Joseph Eisenberg were welcomed aboard as panelists. And we're definitely a good group there. Then today we added Brian D. Anderson, and he is a big indie success story. Sold over 500,000 books, sold as an indie author. His first book in his Dragon Vein series was recognized top five finalist at Audible.com for Fantasy Book of the Year in 2015. He also was the first independent author in history to secure a six-figure audio-only deal for his two-book sequel, The Godling Chronicles. He also has a three-book deal with Tor Books, and he is currently writing short fiction for the Conan the Barbarian franchise. So, I mean, just awesome, awesome spotlighted guest who we announced today. And then also then coming back and just one of our favorite guests by far, and that's Lee Pennington. I mean, just an amazing guy, author, filmmaker, poet, playwright. He is a poet laureate of the state of Kentucky. It's a lifetime appointment by the state legislature that was made in 1983. He taught for nearly 40 years with 32 as a professor of English and creative writing. He has written 23 books, has 9 plays produced, has over 1,300 of his poems have been published in over 300 magazines, 21 documentary films produced and made. And if that's not enough, I mean, he even has at the University of Louisville, he has the Lee and Joy Pennington Cultural Heritage Gallery, which is named after Lee and his late wife, and houses all of his writings, films, and artifacts that he has collected around the world. I mean, just an amazing, amazing person. And, yeah, he's going to be joining us as a spotlighted guest. And then, Holly, we had a big announcement Monday, our guest of honor.
Yeah, we did. Just a little bit. Just, you know, a little feller that's named Terry Brooks. Yeah, you guys ever heard of the Shannara series, as in the TV show The Shannara Chronicles, maybe? Mm-hmm. Yes, he's our guest of honor. Wonderful
yep.
fella. We're so glad to have him. Very honored. He's been around many years. How many titles does he got under his belt, Steve?
Well, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, his full
it's
bibliography, but he has over 23.
He was chosen by George Lucas to novelize The Phantom Menace, the Star Wars franchise. So that's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. And he had, to give you some stats on him, he had 23 New York Times bestsellers. He has over 25 million books in print. He's also regarded as one of the biggest selling living fantasy authors in the world. And so, yeah, we're talking a major guest of honor. And we're really, really excited to have him. He was one of the authors I read during my formative years growing up. I read the Shannara books growing up, and definitely is a thrill for me personally too. So, but that's so it's been a heck of a week for the convention. And of course we always give you the news on that because this podcast is affiliated with the Imaginarium convention. So we always give you the latest news and developments with
the
Imaginarium and Seven Star Press and everything else. Yes. We always try to support the creative community through the convention, the press, the podcast, and everything else. But we couldn't do it without the support of everyone. And supporters for the show tonight that brought you tonight's show are Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and the one and only Ren Garcia. We have just a great core group of supporters on this show. And so let me give them some spotlight, and then it should be about guest time. So first I'm going to give you a little spot from Sandy and go out and pick up some of her books and tell her that you appreciate her support of the show. Here's Sandy.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay, but watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
Thank you, Sandy. You're the best. Lender Blender, Vampire Satire. Pick that one up, folks, and other Sandy Lender titles. And, it's great stuff. Great stuff. And so now, Holly, here we go. Ren Garcia.
Okay.
And the famous question at the end. All right, here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes. Yes, Ren.
Yes, Ren Garcia. We are weird enough for you.
We are. And definitely every day, all day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Yeah, we are weird enough for you, Ren Garcia. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you again. Yeah, Ren Garcia and Sandy Lender for supporting the show. And, yeah, we got our guest tonight. Tonight's going to be fun. We are going over to the world of music. And tonight's guest is a national recording artist and also is the front man and lead singer and also songwriter with the internationally acclaimed heavy metal hard rock band Zero King. Phenomenal group. And so now a number of you know who I'm bringing aboard, the one, the only, the inimitable Andy Hott. Andy, you're on the show. Welcome. Your mic is on.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
There he is. Long time no here.
Yeah.
Good to catch up with
you,
man.
Good to be back.
This is fun, man. And we were watching your newest video again before the show, and Holly just had a blast. She was sitting there rocking out to it, and oh man,
yeah,
it was good.
Kevin.
So yeah, we're
awesome. Yeah,
yeah,
the video and the song are both a hell of a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And and our mutual friend, you noticed probably that Pete Fry of the band Far Cry, you know, they gave us permission to use the intro music there. So yeah, so there's a lot of got a lot of connections going on tonight, but yeah, definitely. I know Pete's probably listening out there tonight, so shout out to him. But yeah, good to
absolutely.
Have you back.
Hey, Pete.
It's been a while, and yeah, you got American Savior, the brand new album. You have an insane touring schedule coming up. I mean, we've got, you know, like I said, you know, you're always working on songs and everything else. And so, yeah, we got a lot to catch up on tonight. And then that video, man, and I love it, man. I told Holly, I said, man, when I watched that video the first time, I was wondering, I was like, all those young female martial artists were like getting closer and they surrounded the band. I was like, is Andy going to have to fight his way out in the rest of the band? You know, they're going to get attacked here at any minute. Is there going to be a big, like Kiss Meets the Fam of the Park kind of fight scene here or something, you know? They're going to have to get
Andy
out of there.
Andy beats up a bunch of kids. That sounds like something you might have came up with as a concept, like back in like the early, you know, the mid-90s or whatever, when we were hanging out talking about, you know, crazy band ideas.
Crazy band ideas, and but one of them has a katana though, so that's pretty dangerous. So yes,
yeah.
You got to block it with the guitar as best as possible. But man, it's that's a great video. Who's the? Could you give me some info on the filmmaker, because it's very, very well shot and produced?
Cool, for sure. So the guy who shot that video, his name is Matt Napier, and he's doing a lot of videos for a lot of different people right now. He kind of came on our radar. He had worked with some bands from around the Kentucky, like in our area, but Kentucky, like northern, I guess, you know, whatever, eastern Kentucky is what I'm trying to say.
Eastern Kentucky,
you know,
right. Yeah.
Eastern to the north, I guess, you know, like the Ashland, Grayson, that area, you know.
Right, right, yeah.
Some of those bands. What Drives the Week comes to mind, Ivy Oracle and a couple others. He's a really talented guy. He's working on he's actually got a video coming out with a buddy of ours, a guy named Jason Christ. He's putting out a video, I think, at the end of the month, I think on January 27th, so look out for that. But, yeah, so that was a really interesting, like, the whole process for that was just really kind of cool, how that all just kind of came together. Because Shane had the concept for the video pretty much before we even found a director, you know, a DP or whatever. Uh-huh. The way that all kind of came around is that Shane has a embroidery T-shirt design business, and then one of his clients, Alan French, is the head of the Chesapeake Karate Academy. And so Shane has done some embroidery for their, like, uniforms, their gis or whatever. And Alan was in there one day, and he was like, hey, you know, I think it'd be really cool to have my kids in a rock video. And I got Shane's, you know, gears turning or whatever, and he came up with the whole concept for that. And then Alan was like, hey, I know this karate champion. She's out of the Detroit area, and I can bring her down. And her name is Kaylin Kowalski, and she just knocked it out of the park. Her and her her co-lead, who's a gymnastics champion on his side of things. And, of course, Alan French put this whole thing together. So we basically just, like, showed up and played, and Shane had been there all day, having the kids go through the whole storyboard and all that kind of thing. So we didn't see anything until, like, the final edit, basically. Kind of
yeah,
weird.
There were some stunts, though, in it, because there's one where she – does a throw on that one guy, and does a throw, and there's some other stuff in there. Yeah, so you had some stunts in there too, that scene where you guys are all surrounded by them, that's great, man. I love that.
Oh, in the school gym, yeah. But I mean,
yeah.
Kaylin, she competes like nationally. She's been out to Vegas. She's been on ESPN2. She's been on the cover of like Black Belt magazine and things like that. So
nice.
She's really well known in the karate world. And then when we went up to Detroit recently, her and her family came out and watched us at the Token. So that was really cool. We'd met her mother, but we'd never met her dad before. And that was our like second time hanging out with Kaylin. So that was super cool.
How long did the video shoot take for you guys as far as the shooting itself?
Basically like a day, not even a full day,
Wow.
I think Shane started with the kids probably about 8 or 9 in the morning, and we got there about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and shot for a few hours, just the performance stuff, and we were out of there before 7 o'clock probably.
Uh-huh.
So maybe 12 hours total, 11 hours, something like that.
Yeah, kudos to Matt Napier. It looks really good. I mean, he has really good shooting and brings across the band's personality. I mean, it's a – Yeah, you always have a little bit of mischief and humor in Zero King, and it's like you kind of sense that in this one too, and it's awesome. So you guys have a lot of stuff working, and you're known for, like I said, you got it's kind of like you're a metal band, but you have a really good sense of harmony, vocal harmonies, a lot of melody. You got a lot of hooks and riffs, and it's just really catchy stuff. Great choruses. I mean, that's something I've seen with your music all through the years. And this song, Back Off, is no exception. I mean, very catchy.
Yeah.
And
Back Off is starting to make some waves at radio, too. We the first station to play it was a station out of Bowling Green. Because we were playing Glasgow, and so they played it on their local show, and they've done it a couple times when we've been in that area. And then Rock 105 here in Charleston picked up on the song and put it on their All Request Lunch, and now it's in like sort of an overnight rotation, but then people can also request it and they'll play it during the day and stuff. So really cool.
Right.
And then we're getting ready at the end of January to announce a station up in Michigan that's going to be spinning Back Off. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, it looks like a lot of, we all know that the world shut down in 2020 and certainly affected all the bands out there in bad ways, because you guys couldn't get out there and do live shows and everything. But it looks like you guys are just, I mean, there's just like a certain energy now, and you guys have a lot on the map. I guess you're just taking some time to set up, in addition to the new album. But, yeah, you guys have a full slate of shows. I mean, it sounds like just a crazy year.
Yeah. So going back to that, that's what we basically did during the pandemic. We worked on this record, to get it ready so that when things did open up again, we could get out there and start pushing it. And so – pretty much the tail end of 21, we sent it to our friend Dave, Dave Tedder, who you also know, out with Vanity Music Group. Vanity Music Group and Weapon Records, and he was like, I really like this a lot. So we pretty much took like a year figuring out like how we wanted to go about the release, and he's working on some international stuff too. We're a European release and a Japanese release. And they'll have some different bonus tracks and some different artwork and things like that. So, I think that's really exciting. And then pretty much coming out of like I said, out of the pandemic, we knew a few places, but a lot of places had closed. You know, there was a whole shift in the industry where people were trying to figure it out again and who was going to keep live music going and all that sort of thing. And so it took a good part of like the end of 21 and we've started really pushing things in 22 because we kept thinking, oh, it's going to release, you know, we're going to release soon. And it kind of got pushed back to like the end of the year, which is fine because it really allowed us to set up some markets that we had never been to before. And sort of use the video as sort of a lead. And of course we have a lyric video for a song called Dead or Dancing. So we kind of just had those two songs out there until the album, released probably, I think November of last year. And we started playing, you know, Indiana and Michigan and some different places in Kentucky that we'd never been to before. And, you know, really starting to get out there more. And so we have, starting in February, so like February through probably like early April, we've got about 13 shows right now, and they're in 6 states. Mm-hmm. And then we're trying to expand out from there.
Nice. And who is are you guys doing your booking in-house, or do you guys have an agent in that area, or both?
It's still pretty much me, although, you know, we've made some friends with some promoters out there who are helping us out a lot. Yeah, and some of the managers of some of the different bands we play with, too. I guess, you know, it's still very much an in-house thing. It's like between Dave, myself, and Shane, we're kind of self-managing, I guess, right now until we find the right, you know, the right fit to make that next step, which would be awesome.
Well, you guys know the business. I mean, certainly, I mean, you've had, you know, plenty of seasoning and experience in that area. So, yeah, I know that. Yeah. If you get one, you make sure you get a really good one that actually can get something done for you.
I mean, that's the thing. They've got to be able to do more. They've got to be able to do more than, say, myself and Dave and the people we're working with. Because if not, we can do it ourselves. Not that we're completely a man on an island. Like I said, there's other people out there helping, you know, people like Paul Cobb with Smash Concerts up in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I got to shout out my friend Randy Ward. He manages a band from Danville, Kentucky called Taylor Road that is out there, same scene.
Yep.
And we're really good friends with those guys. And
Fantastic, man. Yeah, as far like Holly was curious about this, and you know, because I know there's probably too many for you to mention, but I mean, you guys have opened for a number of national acts, and Holly was curious as to, you know, maybe if you could tell a few of the bands that you've played with that the audience might be familiar with.
Sure. So in the last like year or so, the ones I can think of right off, Jackal, Saliva, Shallowside, who are blowing up on Octane right now. We've known those guys for a number of years, so it's really good to see them getting out there. Of course, Boba Flex and the Lonely Ones, which is sort of variations of the same band there. But, I mean, bigger names over the years, Pop Evil, Fozzy, Soil, Drowning Pool, Dope, Nonpoint, Kindred, Duff McKagan's Loaded. That's a personal favorite of mine that we play with Duff from Guns N' Roses. That's pretty cool. Airborne. I love playing with those guys.
Love Airborne.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a ton over the years, and we're looking forward to more. So.
Yeah. Well, good, man. I'm excited about just when you told me about your schedule. I was like, awesome. You're gonna be getting out and playing, and sounds like you're starting.
Yeah,
to
we're
get
coming
some
to
airplay.
Lexington, actually. We're gonna be in Lexington on St. Patty's Day at the 11th Frame. With Devil Be My Judge and I wish I could remember Scott's. I'm going to look this up real fast because it's important.
Holly, mark that down. Mark that down.
Yeah,
Holly.
St. Patty's Day. Okay, so
that would be awesome.
Scott Wright is in a band called Forever Broken. So it's Forever Broken, Devil Be My Judge, and Zero King. I don't know the order. But we're going to be playing 11th Frame there in Lexington on St. Patty's Day.
Very cool. God, that's awesome. Got a good scoop for this region, at least. Yeah.
And then awesome. We're going to be in Louisville February 10th at 21st Amendment. Yeah. 21st Amendment is what I meant to say there in Louisville. And we're doing a couple different things in Kentucky. On the 25th, we're going to be in Sandy Hook, Kentucky, at a new place called The Side Hustle. We played there with our friends in Downtrend recently. And we're doing that show with Taylor Road, Shades of Raven, which is another Kentucky band, and Voice of Reason, which I believe is a Lexington band. You know those guys?
No, not yet. Not yet. Have not had a chance to see them play yet.
So we're playing a bit in your region for sure.
Yes, you are. This is awesome, man. With the new album, one thing I know a lot of folks that are various types of writers, screenwriters and prose writers and whatnot, that they're going to be interested in is with the new album, lyric writing. And I was going to give you a chance to spotlight that a little bit tonight, because obviously being, you know, the lead singer front man, I mean, you're the one that has to deal with lyrics. And when you have them, you have to apply them to the melodies of the band and come up with the vocal melodies. And I wanted to comment on some of the lyric for this album.
Yeah, yeah. So with the lyrics, it's kind of like it always has been, though. Chris Webb is pretty much the prime guy when it comes to the lyrics, although there are some songs on there that, you know, I was certainly a contributing writer and, you know, worked on melodies and things like that. But also Shane came up with some lyrics this time around, and so did JP. So American Savior is really a band album because this is the first album we've done since JP's been back when he came back in 2018. So that kind of brought the whole classic lineup full circle again there. And we really just put our best material forward on this one. We really love this record a lot. There is some really cool lyrical stuff going on this record for sure. And, you know, some of it's the typical party rock and roll stuff, and then other times it's a bit more serious. We've got a song called Soldier Song that deals with veterans of, you know, foreign wars and things like that coming back and not having the support that they should have when they get back, and that, you know, whether that be mental or you know, medical, or maybe, you know, homeless or whatever, you know, whatever problem it is that they've got, that people just kind of turn a blind eye, but yet we treat them like they're heroes when they're fighting for us, you know what I'm saying?
But that's
song kind of with.
Yeah, Holly can comment on that a little bit, because many people near and dear to us fit that category. You know, Holly can vouch for me on that.
Well, my dad was a retired drill sergeant, Army drill sergeant. So he was in the Army for, gosh, like 40 years. So, yeah, he did reserves the last umpteen years. So I'm an Army brat myself. And, I've seen a lot of that.
My dad served in Nam. He served in Desert Storm and – retired a full colonel in the Army. So,
nice.
Yeah, and then
so
Shane.
You're an Army brat too. You understand?
Well, kind of. I mean, I grew up here, and he was, you know, he was elsewhere. My mom and dad were divorced when I was like two.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so I didn't grow up as an Army brat, but you know, I guess I kind of have that pedigree, so to speak. I guess.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of went the opposite direction, of course, but, you know, as far as who I am personally or whatever.
Andy joined the KISS Army.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But we have a lot of...
I think if it was a thing like after 1982 or whatever, I'm sure I probably would have joined it, you know.
Right.
I was a member without ever enlisting, so, yeah.
Right.
That's
cool.
Yeah. Well, Andy, do you play an instrument, or have you always been passionate about singing?
No. I play guitar as well, and I write riffs and things like that. I write some music for the band, but I just don't perform guitar live. And I might start doing it, though. We've been talking about doing that. I think that would be kind of fun to do on some songs, especially because some of the things that Shane comes up with are really made for two guitars anyway. And so that would be a way to kind of get some of that stuff out there live a little bit more like the record.
Yeah.
Cool.
That'd be cool.
Before we get too far, though.
What's your writing look like? I mean, hold on. Do you like sit down with the whole band or just a couple of you and, you know, bounce ideas off each other? Or do you do it like privately? And not co-write, but actually, you know, do your own thing, and then you come together and they say, oh, but it would sound better if you did this, or, you know, and so what's your process?
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that can happen. Sometimes somebody will have a full song, and they'll just be like, okay, here's all the parts I've got for this. And then other times somebody might just have a riff. And then even if I'm not, like, playing while they're writing, I'll suggest things or tell, you know, be like, hey, I think we should do this here or whatever, or let's make an abrupt stop right before we go into this part here or whatever, you know. Certainly arrangement-wise and kind of like – and if I go home and I come up with an idea, then I'll bring that in for next time or whatever and be like, here, I think I might have fixed this or whatever. And that can go really for any of us. Like I said, there's songs on this record that we all sort of had different parts of the genesis of it. The Shut Up and Get on Stage riff actually is an old guitar riff of mine from many years ago, and then we worked it into a song probably around, I don't know, 2012 or something like that. And it just never really made a record, but we thought this would be, it'd be kind of fun to put on this one because we wanted to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be the only song really that kind of dates from that time period. But, yeah, getting back to your point, it's a really collaborative thing. Sometimes, you know, JP will come in with a song. He actually had most of the music for Soldier Song. And then Chris just knocked it out of the park with the lyrics, and we worked, you know, Chris and I worked together on the melody and, you know, mm-hmm. made that what it was
now,
for sure.
Now, getting back to just a little bit with the lyrical aspect of it though, like when Chris came in with those lyrics and in other instances where somebody else is bringing you lyrics, because your music flows so well, and you do. The lyrics always flow so well with your songs. I mean, they you know, there's nothing clunky about it, nothing forced. It just, you mm-hmm. have a really nice flow with the songs. Do you ever have to, like when they hand you the lyrics, do you ever have to make a few tweaks to make it fit with the song
oh,
itself?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So Back Off is a good example of that. I actually flipped the chorus in that song so that it would answer back with Back Off, Baby, I Don't Feel Like Dancing line, because that was actually the first line of the chorus when Chris handed me the lyrics on that or whatever. And I thought it was a better hook to have it be the answer back, mm-hmm. and that's just the way I kind of, like, changed it there. And, there's plenty of times like that. Sometimes things can be too wordy. We'll have to figure out ways to, you know, make it flow into you know, melodically or rhythmically or whatever. There's always little changes like that for sure. And then there's other times where I've, like, what's the song? Streetcar. So Streetcar, the chorus in that, I actually wrote the words to that and kind of had a different – I think I had, like, a much quicker delivery on it originally. And then Chris was like, hey, why don't you, you know, make this phrase longer here, and that way you can space this out over, you know, four – stanzas or whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, let's try that.
When people don't think about that, I mean, you know, somebody's writing, you know, some riffs or, you know, a good melody or something like that, but yeah, when you bring in, you know, the vocals and lyrics, I mean, that's a whole nother dimension on how that fits into, you know, what you're doing originally on a guitar or something like that. I mean, that's it's just a fascinating process to kind of watch all that come together. And that's kind of what I was, you know, kind of getting out there.
And a lot of times Chris has really good melodic ideas too. You know, I mm-hmm. might take the basis of what he's given me as far as a melodic idea and then, you know, make it a little bit more, you know, form fit or whatever. But, you know, he comes up with some great melodies and so does Paul. So does JP.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, Shane, sometimes he comes in with like almost an entire song written except for lyrics and melodies or whatever. He might have all the music or whatever for a song. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to keep it, you know, 100% just that either too. We you know, kind of tweak it.
Mm-hmm.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing you guys have going for you is you have band stability and you have chemistry with these guys. And I mean, you've worked with these guys for a little bit now. And, you know, I know you and Shane, you know, go pretty far back, and Chris, but, as far as this lineup, I mean, I was trying to remember that exactly, but how long have you guys worked together as a unit now?
Okay, so like I said, when Paul came back, that was in 2018. So we're looking at 5 years there. But he was also in the band before. There was a time where he took off, and he had some things going on in Nashville and things like that. And we went through a couple other bass players, one of which was Tom Cofer, and he actually helped us record the Empire of Sin album, which is what we released in late 2019, which I always say that, you know, if you're going to release a record but right before a pandemic is not the best time.
That's true. Anything, believe me, trust me, in the book world, nothing is, it's not good.
Yeah, because once that pandemic hit, it was like, oh, we have no way to promote this.
God.
We can try to play live on Facebook. We can make videos. Yeah. That's about all we could do, you know. And so we just really hunkered down and got this record finished, and that way we could be out the box with it fairly quickly, for at least on Zero King, you know, standards.
Now, if I remember right, though, you guys jumped on doing some live streaming, though. You were early with some of that to at least play on something, you know. As far as during that period.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is we never stopped rehearsing.
Right.
You know, even when they were telling people, oh, don't have more than two people in a room or whatever. Just like whatever.
Right.
Well, you know, not that we weren't taking it seriously, but we just weren't going to let that stop us from, you know, until they had, like, people on the road, like, actually stopping you from driving somewhere.
Oh,
we were
going to
take our chances, you know.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. And a lot of groups I know, they continued to, you know, get together to work. But no live venues.
Also,
the only thing you could do is live stream.
Yeah. We also felt that when we did those live things that we were still connecting with people, you know, and giving them something to.
Yeah, it became that way. Yeah. People caught on to that. We know a band out of Louisville. We're really good friends with the front man. And
He knows Jason.
We did the benefit for the frontline workers with them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool!
That Christy put together.
We love Jay. Jay's awesome, and he used to do, him and the band would do, you know, live concerts and live when they was like getting together and jam sessions and doing, and it was really cool because we were seeing a live concert that, well, we wasn't going to get to see any other way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all we had.
Yeah.
And Stephen also did a little show every day where he would talk about
things. Yeah, and he checked in on a few of those. He saw me just sit around BSing every day.
What I'd forgotten before we did this interview, I kind of went back and I was like, so I know I was on like in like 20, whatever it was, 16 or something like that. But then I'd forgotten that Jason and I actually did an episode with you guys. Around the time of that frontline benefit.
That's right.
So.
That's right.
Some good memories.
We're gonna
have
to get your
live venues.
We need to get we need to get Andy up to Imaginarium. Jay would
I'd
love
want
that.
To.
We need to get you up to
I would love
extension.
To make that happen.
That'd be great. You could talk about songwriting.
Bring up, we always joke about Sweatfest, but poor Andy, he was with me at that god-awful Sweatfest that one year where we all baked.
Well, this is not like that.
The funny thing about that was we were supposed to have a table, and we ended up getting set up in the hallway. So the only time that people would interact with us is when they were going into the main convention center and when they were coming back out.
Right.
But,
oh God!
Yeah,
I still have
a corner. He likes the corner in our venue we use now, the Holiday Inn East there in Louisville
East.
And he's got so
nice
much
venue.
To set up that he's got his little corner space out there in the Creative Valley, and I mean he sets up all kinds of stuff. He just goes crazy.
Yeah,
and it's
all
the greatest thing
stuff.
Ever.
Yeah.
He's always like, I want my corner. I said, you can have your corner, Jay.
Yeah,
one
it's still
day,
a neat thing to be a part of because, like, if I'd known that I was going to meet, like, the guy from The Karate Kid who's on Cobra Kai now, Johnny, you know. Sapka? William Sapka? Because he was there, and I want to say Booger from Revenge of the Nerds was there.
He was there. Yes, he was.
So we met some pretty cool people out of that, you know, just sort of incidentally meeting them. It's not like we stayed in contact with anybody, but and did we play? I think we played, right?
Yeah.
We played with Poetry of the Dead, right?
Yeah, I think that's how it ended up.
Yeah, Jay always plays at Imaginary Sports.
Because John Mattingly was doing the sound, right?
Yep, and he's still working with Jay.
He's been working with a lot of bands there. He's been working with, like, Wild Ride and some other bands out of Louisville.
That's great work, yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll send you the guest app after the show here. Jay, get a hold of you and say, hey, get a hold of Andy.
Somehow.
Work something out. Jay handles, like, the bands and people coming in doing the music stuff.
Okay.
Well, just so you know, we have air conditioning.
So is that September?
We have air conditioning.
July. It's July.
Oh, it's in July. Okay.
14th through
16th. Yeah.
Okay. 10th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. Let me run those dates by everybody. But send me the information.
Okay.
We'd love to be part of it.
We can check that out.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
But you'd love it. Yeah. It's such a nice event, and it's got air. We have working air conditioning, which is I want to assure Andy after that one.
So it was really just that first year that it was like that, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I know, but it just happened to be the one that you came to.
The last one was Mall Fest. It wasn't too
on that one. But that was on that one.
Affiliated with it. Steve just ran the literary track.
I'd worked as a volunteer.
We had nothing to do with the running
that
of
one.
We ran
but,
a
yeah, we, yeah, that was not like our convention or anything like that. This one is, but you know, that's, but I still have some. I love to tell some of those stories. They were adventures for sure.
Yeah.
But
I still remember those Kentucky music conferences and things like that you put together.
Oh heck yeah,
those were good times.
Oh, I missed
those. Before Steve gets into that, hey, I got a chat room. Kenzie Michaels is an author from Louisville area. She lives in Indiana, but she's always attended Imaginarium, good buddy of ours, great author, and she has a song, she said, that needs music, and she's like, get you there. Get you at Imaginarium. Make it happen, Stephen. She needs to talk to Andy.
That'd be awesome, Andy. I will do my best. Andy, get some independent songwriting gigs out of this. That'd be, who knows?
Yes, there you go.
Oh, man. You'd be like,
we've been working on a cover EP. We've got all the music down. Most of the vocals are recorded. A little bit of guitar needs done. We're doing 5 songs, and it's called Hand Shoes and Horse Grenades.
Nice.
And it's pretty cool. It's everybody picked a song. We all had one song collectively we knew we wanted to cover, which is Lover Boy Working for the Weekend. We play that live, and it goes over really
sweet.
Well. So we thought, let's record that. Yeah.
Perfect.
And so we all kind of picked different songs. And so Paul picked Fall Into Pieces, Faith No More. Shane picked Something About You by Level 42. Chris picked Country Boy Can Survive. I picked Games People Play, Alan Parsons Project. And so I'm looking forward to getting that out there. Yeah.
Nice.
Metalized versions of these. That's awesome, man. That's cool.
Yeah. Just songs that we kind of all kind of grew up on, or, you know, one or more of us really, you know, vibed with or whatever, and had always wanted to do. So just kind of for fun, you know, but we're going to put it out, let people hear it.
Well, those could be fun. I mean, like Ace Frehley's Origins covers albums are a blast. And I mean, yeah, some of those can be a lot of fun. Yeah. To hear the band's, a certain band's version of these. And I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to ask you, Andy, any plans for vinyl on this one, or is that going to be pending?
No, we really want to this time around. There has been some talk of it, so we're going to be looking into that for sure. But we want to do
good,
it.
Good, good, good.
We want to get this record out vinyl, because I know there's a lot of people out there that love vinyl and would probably love to have a Zero King vinyl album in their collection.
That's me too. Yeah, the market is getting better. And the cool thing is, a lot of younger music fans are getting into vinyl, which is, I think, is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
a lot of the Gen
Z
crowd,
Generation Z likes vinyl. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they like vinyl. It's awesome.
Yeah, my daughter, she's got lots of vinyl. She loves vinyl.
Yep. So yeah, it's kind of neat to watch that happen. But yeah, congrats on the new cover album. Keep us posted on that for sure. That's do you have a rough idea when that might be out?
Sometime this year for sure.
This year,
I'm not exactly sure when, but we have to finalize it and stuff. So might even have a guest appearance on there, but I can't talk about that right now. So,
right, that's awesome, man. Yeah, congrats
on
that.
Once that happens, I can announce it. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. Believe me, I know that. I know that is because running a convention, we have stuff percolating for the convention that we have to hold back on, and it kills us.
Yeah.
We want to go public. Yeah, but I know how that goes. As most of the shows you're talking about were mainly like club shows. Do you have anything going on in the summer festival circuit planned yet?
There's a couple that we're looking at in Michigan, and we're waiting to hear confirmation on. And I'd love to talk about them, but I can't right now. But I can tell you that there's a few up in Michigan, we're kind of fielding some other stuff too. So we're hoping to start doing some maybe little runs with some people. But again, it's all sort of in development, but I feel that we've got a really strong push coming out of the gate, having as many shows as we do, February and March and into April and things like that. So April and May are actually pretty open. And I think that's almost by design to see what's popping at that point, because there's a couple other stations in Kentucky that are talking about picking up the album and maybe a couple of Ohio stations, and we'll see what happens there.
So how is right now? You've seen many shifts in the music industry over the course of your career. I mean, you've seen a lot of things. You saw you were there when the incoming of digital music really came in, and as far as when the time when a lot of cities had great hotbeds of live venues and many options to when things got more sparse, and then of course the pandemic. And what is like I said, what is the state of indie music today? What are the biggest challenges facing a band like now as compared to like 5 years ago, with the business side of it, the Spotify being
So talk about the
indie music challenges today.
Yeah. So with the fact that the sales side of things doesn't really generate the revenue anymore. It's not as easy to get on like with the nationals and stuff like that. Everything's pretty much a buy on, and the same with promoters and the same with radio promotion. And, at this point we're kind of just using the strength of the material and our personal connections and things like that to get on things, whether it's with promoters or whether it's with stations or just kind of like selling them on the band itself. At some point money becomes a real thing, especially if you want to get on the bigger market stations with any kind of real like airplay or XM stations. A lot of that's done through like promotions companies like Landshark Promotions and, Munsey with skateboard and stuff like that, skateboard marketing. That all just takes money. And what we've kind of tried to do, it hasn't always been successful, but since we came out of the pandemic, we've tried to like pick up some cover gigs and things like that to try to keep at least more money flowing through, because a lot of times you go to these new markets and you lose money. You just hope to try to almost break even and stay with people and just find ways to cut corners and things like that, to try to make it work. And then with the price of gas, like where it was up to like $5 a gallon there for a while in this area of the country, that was brutal, brutal. There's a little bit of relief, I guess, on that side of things now, but, that's still a huge, because a lot of these Some places to get on, you know, into the right venues, you've got to agree to a ticket buy. And if you're going into a market mm-hmm. where you don't have a whole lot of fans, you're pretty much paying to play.
Right.
And,
yeah, that's the model I've been
seeing
quite a bit.
That's the reality of things.
Yeah. Well, you know, now it's the price of eggs. That's what's up right now. But it's
the price of eggs.
Yes.
Yeah, the price of the eggs.
Eggs are priceless now, for God's sake. Yeah, they're like gold, man.
There's late night Waffle House dinners coming to premium, huh?
Yeah, now it's that's,
yeah.
That's
That used to be a cheap way for you and I to go eat after a show
right.
or something.
That show, right.
So, but now it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I can afford the eggs.
No,
but yeah,
there
mean,
ain't no more $5 breakfast at Denny's. You know, that's going to be out the wall.
You know,
that's out the door.
I remember bars that would, like, serve breakfast at the end of the night or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess to sober everybody up, and I thought that was brilliant. But, yeah, you're right. That doesn't exist
uh-huh.
anymore either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, people don't mainstream fans and just people, you know, just people that aren't in the music world don't understand that Spotify's compensation models for artists is terrible. I mean, let's just say what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's pretty much non-existent.
Awful.
I mean,
yeah.
Unless you have a million streams on something, then, you know, you're probably
right.
not even going to see more than a few cents, a few
yeah,
dollars. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's
yeah.
just so tough. And now it's a move to, you know, like you said, it's like if you can make money off live shows and if you have a big enough following, you know, merch, you know, could come into play and things like that.
Right.
But, yeah, it's tough to get all those revenue streams chugging for a band. I mean, it's not easy because all that stuff takes
not
money
easy.
To build up. So it's
yeah,
tip of the cap to you guys, you know, because I know it's I know how hard it is. Just being being a writer, I mean, you know, but you're talking about a band that has to go on the road and has logistics and hotels and you know, gas costs and this and that. And yeah, I mean,
I mean, if we didn't love it, we wouldn't still be doing it, you know. But
right.
we do love it,
yeah.
and we love interacting with the fans that come out to the shows and meeting everybody and partying and just
mm-hmm.
new experiences, new places, you know, new people. Love it.
Yeah, you guys are fun to hang out with. You guys are fun.
It might be. So my drummer and I have had a conversation. It's like, well, you know how buddies go out fishing or something somewhere, and they spend a bunch of money on it, and they don't actually get anything in return, but they have a great time. And it's like, so it's the one really expensive fishing trip that never ends, basically.
Right. I know. But one of your strengths of Zero King is as a live act. I mean, you guys bring it. On stage. I mean,
yeah.
you're not just like standing there rooted to the floor and, you know, I mean,
sure.
you guys
sure.
get into it. And so how
yeah.
is, like, who puts the set list together and how do you put it together? Because, I mean, you guys do a great job of that. And that's another strength that you guys have.
Yeah. So with a few albums under our belt now, we've got a handful of songs that people, you know, at least our fans, like have basically said, these are the strongest songs you guys have or whatever. And it's not that they came out and told us that. We know it instinctively from playing it live or the online reaction to certain things, you know, songs we have on Spotify and things like that. So we kind of craft it like that. But then we also try to, like, throw in some curveballs and play some of the deeper stuff, too, every once in a while. So the set can change. And sometimes we can change the set around based on the kind of show we know we're going to, like, be playing. You know, if we're playing with bands that aren't quite as heavy as us, we've got some popular stuff we can go to. And if we've got if we know the bands are like, you know, death metal or whatever, it's like, okay, we better play the heavy ones tonight, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you guys, I mean, obviously with death metal, I mean, you guys are, you know, have so much, you know, melody and harmonies and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You definitely got tilt on the heavier side of you guys with that
sure,
kind of
but,
crowd.
But I mean, we've got those songs
sure.
in our repertoire, you know, where I'm a more guttural singer on certain things or the riffs and the drums are heavier. So we can, you know,
yeah.
kind of appeal to that crowd too. And then, usually what we'll end up doing is put something that's like incredibly poppy in there too, just
mm-hmm.
just to be like, oh yeah, well we're not exclusively this, you know, we do this as well, you know? I remember
like I
one
said,
show
mis-
we
you guys
played.
Are always have some mischief. Always mischief.
Yeah.
With Zero Games.
So we played this show, I think it was in Fort Wayne, and this was a couple of years ago, in the before times. Pre-pandemic or whatever, yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
And all the bands on it were really super heavy. And so we were mm-hmm. like, well, we could either play all our heavy stuff or go completely the opposite way and, like, play our cover of Maneater by Hall & Oates or something. And mm-hmm. so we did that, and, like, the death metal people actually really kind of liked that, I think. They were because it's one of those songs that's universal or whatever, and we rock it up. And then I think
right.
we did, like, Bark at the Moon or something. Let's do something classic rock or whatever, that even though
yeah.
the heaviest of death metal people are still going to be Aussie fans, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The set list is always kind of changing. And then we've done the cover thing too, at times, you know, the four set cover thing. We usually play some of our own stuff as well for those kind of gigs, but we've got a lot of stuff we can draw from, you know, songs we know and things like that.
Yeah, and give a quick rundown of your full discography at the moment for Zero.
Okay.
As far as, like, what's been released.
So what's out there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Kings of Self-Destruction, it was our first album, and that one has Dead Rockstar on it, which is still our probably mm-hmm. most popular video that we've ever put out.
Great song.
And that was, yeah. And so from that record, you've got Dead Rockstar and you've got Stone Cold Bitch. And Stone Cold Bitch is like probably – if Dead Rockstar is number one, then Stone Cold is number two, you know, as far as
mm-hmm.
like the biggest songs we've ever had. And then Empire of Sin, that album came
mm-hmm.
out, like I said, the very tail end of 2019. And then, of course,
mm-hmm.
American Savior. And then we're actually in the process of re-recording The Sweet Cell of Excess EP, which came
mm-hmm.
out before Kings, and because that
mm-hmm.
That stuff didn't make it past like the MySpace era as far as like the online presence.
Yeah, I have a copy.
Yeah, yeah.
there's
a few copies out there for sure, but yeah. So and
that'll
you know some of those songs still hold sway. Like we still play 54 XTC a lot. We still play Drugs Will Keep Us Together
nice.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Occasionally we bust out Celebrity. So, you know, those songs that were right at the beginning of us getting started have stood the test of time as far as live material and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some good songs on that. Yeah, I know that I'll have to blast some of those for Holly, as far as the earliest ones, because I have to pull those out, for Holly. Because I don't think she's heard the earliest stuff, the stuff from way, way back. But, yeah, that's
okay, but she's heard Kings and
awesome.
Empire of Sin, or?
Yeah, she's heard Empire of Sin, and she's been checking out the new one. I'm still waiting.
Right.
I'm getting my CD copy here shortly. Yeah, finally
Kings
getting
around. Yeah, Kings of Self-Destruction's a fun one, too. I mean, that's a fun album.
Yeah, we
have to check it out.
Yeah,
because you know, when you first listen to a song the first time, you're soaking it in, you're listening, and you can usually tell if you're going to like it or not. But then the second or third time, you're like, yeah, I'm jamming. But no, I really like your new one. I listened to it, you know, a little bit before the show, and I'm like, hell yeah, I'm sitting there, you know, banging my head. I'm like, that's
mm-hmm.
pretty good. So when I listen to it, I'll be like jamming, you know.
Well, I think we get better at writing like catchy, more immediate songs. You know, as we go along in our writing career or whatever, you know, it's just like anything. You put the time in, and your craft is going to get better. And we found ways to pack everything that we want to in a song, but not have it be super long. You know, keep it in radio length basically, and get to the chorus quicker and. You know, we just learn those skills of the trade, you know,
right.
I think we've got this new album. I think every song is really strong. If people haven't heard the cover of Never Tear Us Apart, the NXS song, they should definitely check it out. You know, check that out because we're getting really good feedback on that. And we might even release that as a single.
Nice. Very
yeah,
nice.
There's been
and,
some talk about that, so.
And I think we got to mention too that one of the things that's a minefield with independent bands is the production. Often, and I'll, you know, I get something that I heard live, and then I'm just like, oh God, when I get the CD or something, because it's like, you know, just the production recording of it's not that strong. But you guys have actually always delivered a solid production. So, I mean, yeah, kudos on that. You guys have some have some real studio savvy, and you've worked with good people.
I think we found some of the we found some of the best people in our area to work with over the years. I mean, we worked with Steve Riley for the first for Kings and for Empire, and then he kind of he's got a family now, so he's not really as active or whatever, or active enough for us to work with him on a, you know, on a consistent basis or whatever. And then we found a guy named Jason Baker, literally right in my backyard. Like, I live in Charleston, and he lives in Dunbar, which is, you know, or lived in Dunbar. I'll get to that in a second, but he, you know, he, like 20 minutes from my house or whatever. And, he recently, moved to Fort Wayne because he's now working for Sweetwater. So we're really excited about having a man on the inside with Sweetwater Music, cause they've got a full production studio and stuff there. So, you know, hopefully maybe down the road, get in that studio and work, you know, cause we like upping our game every time, having a better sounding project, you know, product, a better looking product, whatever it is, you know, just trying to make that next step.
Yeah, cause I like the fact that you guys get together in a studio too, because there's a lot of bands that I, you know, follow, even like you know, on a large, you know, large scale bands that you know, will record their stuff, and it's more or less just each member will record it like at a home studio, and then they'll just you know, upload their track. And then somebody else will kind of synthesize it, you know, the producer will put it together on their end.
So
you guys are getting in a studio. That's awesome. I mean, just still.
Yeah. I mean, while we were recording the American Saviors, sometimes we were the only people, it was us and the engineer, like individually, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, he had, young children, and he didn't want to put a lot of people in a, you know, in a room, and this is before the vaccines and all that kind of thing. So, so that one, this record, we actually didn't, I mean, it's a studio for sure, because it doesn't have to be a recording studio anymore. I mean, as long as someone's got the software and knows how to use it, effectively, it can sound as good as any of the fucking, I'm sorry, any of the big studios.
We're not FCC regulated.
I get it. You know, it can sound as good as any of the big studios that I used to, you know, go to when I was in Atlanta or wherever, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of cool. That's been a major change, is like the software and the tools that you need to record a record have become more available and more, you know, just not as, I don't know exactly how I'm trying to word this, but
yeah, no, that's good.
It was a more exclusive thing back in the day to be able to afford to go into a big studio, but the costs have come down to be more economical. So if you've got a good product, then, you know, you can make a record fairly cheaply. You know, and in our case, we usually pay somebody who's like knows their stuff a lot more than we do. We think, you know, that's the best way for us to go. But there's plenty of bands that are doing it in-house, and some of them are doing it at a very high level. So
I have a question.
I do have a question from the chat room.
Okay.
Pixie's asking, if Andy, do you plan an album around a theme, or just whatever songs come to them and then pick a title?
Yeah.
The album title.
So this record, we didn't really have a title for it, and we had the song American Savior, and I just thought it sounded like a big album. You know, it sounded like a big title. Because you can take it on a lot of different levels. It could be we're the American saviors of rock and roll, you know, in our own deluded heads, or, you know, it could have a political connotation or whatever, you know. So there's a number of ways to take that title. It really depends on the project. Sometimes we'll have a title and we'll try to figure out what songs, you know, fit that that theme or that. Because I don't think that any of our albums have an actual concept per se. They don't tell a story or anything like that. But sometimes there are some themes that do run through and some common threads with some of the material.
Nice.
That, you know, in conjunction with the title of the album. So I hope that answered the question. I'm not.
No, it did. And I'm glad you haven't released an album like Nostradamus from Judas Priest. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah.
You don't have to do a concept album. It's not necessary sometimes. But, yeah, there's some good ones, of course. Yeah, there's some great ones out there. But yeah. So, unless you get the concept perfect and have the right vibe to go with it, sometimes, yeah, those concept albums can be disasters. It happens. It does happen.
Yeah, and I think we like putting a lot of different types of material on records too. Like we try to mix it up, like between our dancier material, our poppier material, our heavier material, our like more sort of satirical, like goofy, like you said, mischievous side or whatever, that kind of material, or more serious, you know, stuff. And that way it kind of takes you on a bit of a journey from, you know, song one to whatever, the last song. Yeah.
Well, I like that. Yeah, because you guys have personality, so I always like to see that shine through. Yeah, that zero-king personality, all you guys do. So, and that's part of what I think wins people over. Because rock, as you said, you know, these days it's not easy to even be a rock band anymore. I mean, it's rock never it rises and it kind of ebbs and flows in popularity if you look over history. And it never goes away. But I know there's some tougher times for sure. But how do you think the rock market? You think we're going to see a big one of those golden periods again at some point?
I think everything's become more segmented and more specialized. Like people can just kind of dial into what they want to hear now. So if like, you know, a certain sound or whatever is what you're into, you can go find those bands really easily, because of the internet and, you know, streaming and all that kind of thing. A band like coming out like say Metallica did in the 80s or whatever, where everybody loved Metallica, you know, and they become this huge band because there weren't that many choices really. You know what I'm saying? There was other bands that were heavy that were playing metal, but you know, it wasn't, you know, there was only so many record labels. There was only so many bands that were getting, you know, the big tours, the, you know, and now it's just kind of like, you know, who can buy the into the spotlight the fastest, I guess. That seems to be the way it is a lot. And I hate to be kind of jaded about that, but I mean, how can you not be, right? If you pretty much
it's tough.
Been in this for your whole life. But we're really thankful that people are vibing and digging on what we're doing, because we, like I said, we love what we do and we really appreciate it when other people also get what we're about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And there is a rising tide effect when one band can get hot for, you know, like a certain, no pun intended, but for a certain scene. That's with the rise of thrash. You know, you had key bands that broke out and then they brought, you know, a huge wave. You know, that's how you found your Death Angels, and that's how what led to your Testaments and stuff. You know, that came from, you know, the early, you know, Metallica, you know, type folks and Slayer.
So
and stuff
on
like
that, I will say this. I think there's a certain segment of people who want music to be real again. Like they really want guys on stage playing instruments singing. And I think that's what you're going to see hopefully more of, as opposed to, you know, the bands who go on there and push a button and their whole show plays on the computer or whatever. And, you know, there's varying levels of that, of course. But, I mean, even on an independent level, you see that. You see bands that, you know, they got their laptop on stage and, you know, their background vocals are running, but nobody's acting like they're even singing.
Right. Well, I think I think we kind of
take pride in the fact that we've honed our skills enough that, you know, we don't need any of that. We're four guys playing our instruments, singing on stage, and I think people hopefully you know, gravitate to that.
Well, I think that's what drives a lot of young fans back to the 70s and 80s and even late 60s kind of music, because they want that organic, you know, come from the heart music with warts and all. And, you know, I mean, they don't want too overproduced. Yeah, I mean, too perfect, you know, in the studio. You know, they want that kind of rawer vibe.
And lyrics that make you feel something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, pretty. I feel it. You're touching my soul.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, not just
feel something,
you know,
or think about something, or, you know, or be like, I kind of agree with that or whatever. Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big driver of some of that stuff. I think, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think that people want to, and I think that's why, let's like Stranger Things, when you had, Master of Puppets, absolutely grabbed everybody. I think people feel that, you know, when it's something that's been more of a,
Who could have predicted that in 2022, two songs that were popular in like 1986,
exactly.
Be the biggest thing going, you know, between Kate Bush and Metallica. It's like you would not have guessed that going into that year.
There's something to that though, Andy. There's something to that though. I mean, people want that feel.
Says something. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because it wasn't all about
that. There was more authenticity on the artistic side or whatever from those golden greats. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yep. Exactly.
One of my biggest problems with some of the stuff I hear today, it just comes across as artificial, for lack of a better word.
Right.
I mean, but not so much in heavy music. Not so much.
I mean, that's
metal,
all stuff that we grew up on. So I think we channel a lot of that. You know, we channel that sort of. You know, if we're playing even in a club, in my head, I'm always trying to play it like it's Madison Square Gardens. You know, I'm trying to play it like it's an arena.
Right.
Just singing to the bartender and the sound guy, you know?
No, you've always, that's one thing I've always loved about you. You give it your all. I mean, I've seen you in front of a crowd of 10. I've seen you in front of a crowd of a packed club, and you deliver the same high-octane show. I mean, that's a pro. That's how it's done.
Yep.
I mean, that's what that calls to me.
Yeah, you do, like, on a video or on an album, you know, and people come to see and they're like, hell yeah, they sound the same. You know, it's not, then you know that you're actually performing, that you didn't use, audio, whatever, you know, different productions with stuff and add-ins and, you know, changed your voice, you know, with computer, help. And so, they see you live and they're like, hell yeah, that rocks, you know, that hits. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We had a show at a place called The Diesel, which is a little bit north of Detroit. It's in Chesterfield. And Shane's amp started going out, like, almost every song. And this is kind of a big show for us. It was our first time playing The Diesel and really our first time playing in the Detroit area at all. And so we were kind of, like, on the fly trying to – Shane had a couple people, like, helping him get his amp working or whatever, and sometimes it would come back in, but when it wasn't working, Chris and myself and Paul, the bass player, and, you know, Chris, our drummer, and Paul, the bass player, we'd have to figure out ways to, like, bring the song down. I'd have to, like, think of ways to, like, keep the crowd, like, engaged and even, like, have them, like, cheering to get Shane's amp to work and things like that, and because I was like, I'm not going to give up on this set. I've got to figure out what I'm going to do if his amp goes out again, and after we got off stage, I mean, people were coming up to me and, like, you know, the sound guy and other bands and the promoter and things like that, being like, that was nothing short of heroic. I've seen other bands, like, have those kind of problems, throw their stuff off the stage or whatever and leave or apologize and walk. You know. And we just, you know, I guess where we've been through so much as far as, like, anything that can go wrong. You know, a la Spinal Tap or something.
Yeah.
We've probably encountered it, and got the experience to get through that. And, you know, probably sold more merch that night just based on, I don't know if it was sympathy or what, but they would come up and be like, hey, you know, what I could hear of Stone Cold Bitch, I really, you know, because we'd even, like, sort of adapt it to where we bring the volume down. I wouldn't scream the lyrics. I'd just kind of, like, sing them, scat style a little bit more, you know, kind of like, oh, let's have a little jazz hour here, whatever. Yeah, basically just stripping it down to like the bare minimums of the song until Shane would get this guitar working or whatever, and that happened a couple of different times during that set. And I guess, you know, I guess that's what you talk, you know, like when you talk about people gravitating towards just being real and being able to adapt in the moment and things like that.
Yeah, and the other area where I think you guys are very real, and I give you more kudos, is you guys are very supportive of other bands. There's often with artists, whether it's, I don't care if it's filmmakers, musicians, writers, whatever. I mean, you get some that are like when they start to, you know, make some headway in their experience and all, they kind of just are territorial or they don't really support or help other acts. But you guys are always supportive. I mean, I've watched that too. And there's a win-win vibe with you guys, and I think that's healthy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the more that these bands become popular, we're friends with those guys. So, you know, their crowd's going to get bigger. If I can expose my people to, you know, our people to their band, then they're going to be more apt to come and see us or them, you know, when they play their area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very much one hand washes the other kind of situation where, you know, if you're, you know, they're trying to break into our market, we're trying to break into their market, and, you know, we expose each other to, you know, our audiences and help each other grow, and we all kind of grow together. A couple bands we've been playing with a lot like that, Taylor Road, I mentioned them earlier, there in Kentucky, Phoenix Rising out of the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. There's a couple bands that are really good in this area here, Golden, Hurl Brickbat, The Switch, really good bands from West Virginia. And of course, you know, we've had some associations with some bands that are still out there doing it, you know, your Byzantines and your Bowflexes and things like that. So, yeah, it's a very small community as far as the bands that are really getting out there and doing it on a more than just local level.
Right. Yeah, it's even harder. Like you said earlier, it's harder than ever in this day and age with the economics of it, all bands are building up a scene though. That's how you build a scene. Yeah. Everybody is
absolutely
helping grow the scene. Yep. Then there you go. I mean, then you have a great thriving thing going on. But another area I wanted to touch on before the end of the show was, one of the great outlets, and we mentioned an example of this, obviously, with Master of Puppets playing in Stranger Things. But, I mean, yeah, when bands appear in TV and film content, sometimes that can really help propel a band forward. You've got such good songs. I can't help but think that filmmakers would easily make use of your songs in films and TV shows.
So our friend Holly, she had a movie called My Autopsy, and it's actually out on Amazon, and we're performing in a scene, and our song is playing in that scene. The song Looks Like Hell off the Empire of Sin album. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely go check that out.
Autopsy.
We will check that out.
Yeah, My
Autopsy. Maybe Holly could join us because there's a Holly thing in the world. There's a certain vibe between Holly.
Yeah, Holly thing.
Holly, then it could be a fun show.
her company's called Screaming Butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah, her company's called Screaming Butterfly. She's working on a Nick Menza documentary with Dave Ellison from that used to be in Megadeth. So they're working on that together. And then she's got some other projects out there and stuff. But yeah, we would love to do more of that. We'd love to have our songs out on more platforms, more in show placements and things like that. Or just appearing as a band was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, your music, I mean, as though you have so many catchy songs. I mean, I just can't help think that, you know, that a filmmaker, you know, if they have a scene where somebody's driving in a car or they're in a club or bar or this or that, I mean, yeah, your music would fit just tons of different contemporary scenes. So I think that
if you know anybody who does music placements, send them my way.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye out. Yeah, we know a lot of filmmakers, so yeah, we'll have to definitely make them aware if you're there, you know. Yeah, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the music's right there on Spotify, or Apple Music or whatever. It's as easy as saying,
YouTube,
here's a link, check these guys out, or check out their YouTube videos or whatever.
Yeah, and you mentioned Ellison. That reminds me, I got to get his album that he just did with Jeff Scott Soto. I know that the two of them collaborated on something, so I need to pick
Ellison's
that up.
Ellison's got a new thing called Kings of Thrash with Jeff Young, who was on the So Far So Good.
They're doing Megadeth. Yeah, and they do Megadeth tunes. Yeah, absolutely.
I think they're doing all of Killing's My Business and all of So Far So Good So What. So those guys are out on tour. I know they've got Columbus and Cincinnati, and I don't know if they're hitting your area or not, playing Lexington, but maybe Louisville. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to check
out
that out
for sure.
But now we're coming up on
we got a few minutes. What new stuff are you digging? Like new music?
Oh,
I know you're always kind of like checking out new bands and new albums and things like that.
I have been on kind of a prog tilt lately. I get in different zones of metal and hard rock. I mean, I like it all. Don't get me wrong. One of my favorite albums of the year was Digital Noise Alliance by Queensryche. I thought that was one of the most phenomenal releases of 2022, for example. So I love it all. That being said, lately I've been kind of tilted toward a British prog metal band called Threshold and another band called Borealis. And those are two groups that I've really been enjoying a lot. That appeals to a little bit more to my Dream Theater Rush side. And so those are a couple that I've really enjoyed. I think there's been a lot of strong albums released recently. I mean, for sure. I mean, just across the spectrum. I mean,
Did you ever check out that Night Flight Orchestra band that I sent your way?
My brain is just drawing a blank at the moment, so I'm not. I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're kind of like a AOR kind of like if bands that were on the radio back say around 78 to 82 wrote certain songs, then they were they have that kind of sound of like a Foreigner, a Boston, a Styx. So it's got a classic vibe, but it's also really modern as far as the playing and the ability and everything. A lot of those guys are in other metal bands. Like there's the bass player's from like Arch Enemy and the singer is from Soilwork. And I think they had the guitar player from Soilwork. And so they come from really heavy bands, but they're playing more like classic rock. So they bring a very metal kind of sensibility to it all, but also really sort of, like I said, AOR, sometimes even drifting into like disco and yacht rock type territory and stuff. It's really pretty cool. They're from Sweden.
Nice.
And that's like one
of
the bands
of
I've really been into over the years recently.
Like over there I love like Heat, the band Heat, the new Skid Row singer was their former singer, and I love them. And along that line, Crazy Licks and Kiss and Dynamite are two other bands that I love that are kind of from that general scene. Kiss of Dynamite's from Germany, but they sing, it's a similar type of melodic hard rock style. And actually you guys fit great with any of those bands, I think, with your melodic side. And
I've always wanted to do shows with like Crash Diet. I think us and Crash Diet. And us and like Hardcore Superstar would be another fun one. I really dig what those guys are doing.
But Arch Enemy,
there's a good band that's kind of from that, of that style, but they're actually from Georgia, a band called Kickin' Valentina, if you've ever heard them. I think that would be a cool band to do some stuff with, for sure.
Now we'll have a couple comments we'll go over time in just a little bit, but I want to, while the live show is still on, give your info on links and social media.
Sure. Okay, so the best way to contact us is through our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ZeroKingFans. We have an Instagram, which is Zero King Band Official. We have a YouTube page, which is Zero King Official. We're out on all the streamings, your Spotify's, your Apple Music's, Tidal, all that kind of stuff. And that's probably about the best way. All four of us are on Facebook individually, so you just kind of look us up if you want to reach out to us individually. That's probably the best way.
Nice.
And,
nice.
Yeah, just kind of connect with us, share us with your friends, and hopefully we'll be coming to your town to rock pretty soon.
You got it. And, but getting back to the some of the new albums, I did love Arch Enemy's new one. But then, you know, then on the other end of the spectrum, I loved Stryper's new one. I think they're on a hell of a run. I think their last five albums have been very strong. And so, yeah, that's me. I mean, I like everything. I like I've been on a big Cataclysm kick, you know. So, I mean, that tilts a little more toward death metal, obviously. So,
yeah,
I mean,
sort of a tech death kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Creator. Hate Uber Alice. I enjoyed that, their latest on that too. And as you can tell, I mean, I like it all. But
check out a band called Unto Others. I like those guys a lot. They're sort of like a Killing Joke, sort of a Joy Division meets like Typo Negative. But they've got like some kind of punk, like Motorhead type influences in there too. Just really, really cool stuff. I think they're out of like Seattle. They've got a couple records out. I like Gojira quite a bit on the heavier side of things. There were some really strong, like your classic bands put out some strong albums this year. Megadeth, obviously, really strong album.
Love that.
The newest Ozzy record is just phenomenal. And some of the collaborations are special.
I wasn't expecting much, but it really, after the previous Patient Number 9, I wasn't expecting, you know, a really good album, but it was strong. It was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with the collaborations on there with Eric Clapton and, of course, you know, the recently departed Jeff Beck and Tony Iommi. It was cool to hear Tony Iommi and Ozzy working together again, you know. And Zach and Taylor Hawkins had some, you know, some moments on there too. He did some drum tracks before he passed and... So, I mean, I think that the heavy music and hard rock and rock and roll and everything's in a really good place. Cause like I said earlier, if there's an audience for it, hopefully you'll find it and people will find what they want to, you know, dial into.
And you mentioned Iommi, that's going to be the release of 2023 for me, but the full Tony Martin, era box set that's coming out, vinyl and, I cannot wait for that because it's grossly underrated period. People have no idea how many good songs and how many of Tony Iommi's best riffs are in that period. I mean, he has some amazing stuff, and it kills me that people overlook that period. It's always either Dio or Ozzy. But, man, if you haven't heard the Tony Martin years, I mean, Eternal Idol, Headless Cross, even Cross Purposes, I mean, they are strong albums. I mean, Tear. And I even like a lot of Forbidden. I mean, I know a lot of people give that a lot of flack, but I mean, I actually love Forbidden, and they're supposedly gonna reissue that remixed as well with and that was always a big criticism. So, that's coming. But there's supposed to be a full box set of all of it on vinyl, and I assume CD will be part of that this year. But everything remastered, so. That's going to be album or release of the year. So my fingers crossed.
Cool.
I think I had a brain lapse. I meant, Patient Number 9. Yeah, I was thinking of Ordinary Man, the previous Ozzy album.
See, I like both those records, honestly.
Yeah.
I like both those records.
Number 9,
I think
for me, the new one was stronger, though. I really like the new one.
But, again, that's a situation where Ozzy's more comfortable with Andrew this time around. And you know, they went outside a little bit more, you know, with their collaborations and things like that. And it stepped it up a level, but both those records I think are really strong. And I think Andrew somehow, even though he's much, much younger than Ozzy and from a different side of things on the musical side of things, you know, he's more on the pop side, but he obviously knows Ozzy's sound, knows how to write for Ozzy.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I'm hoping we get another one pretty soon. There's supposed to be talk of Tony and Ozzy doing more stuff together, and there was rumors that Ozzy was going to try to collab with Paul McCartney, and he's been trying to get Jimmy Page to collaborate with him. So that would be cool too, to actually get Jimmy Page sort of out of obscurity, retirement, whatever you want to call it.
Kind of just
then again, he might be like, I don't know, Jeff Beck just did a couple tracks and That really hit me kind of hard. I'm like, he's the first of the, like, those three guys, those three, like, Yardbird guys that, you know, went on to influence everybody from, you know, Beck, Clapton, and Page. You know, they kind of
– yeah.
In the Yardbirds, like the late 60s, they kind of set the tone for hard rock
and
was playing in the 70s, you know?
And, but on a positive note, I will give a shout out for an album that caught me off guard as to how good it was. But The Gang's All Here by Skid Row. I mean, if you're a hard rocker, I mean, pick that one up. That turned out to
that
be nice.
That
is
a fun record,
I mean,
for sure.
That was a good album.
And easily their best release in a long time, for sure.
Oh, since the Sebastian days, definitely. No question. I mean,
really good. Solinger was okay live. I just don't think they ever really had much of a chemistry with him, like writing.
Yeah.
I liked him.
I don't have a problem with it at all. I mean, yeah, he's good, but man, this album this sounded like the old school Skid Row. I mean, it really did. That was cool.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so,
part of that's because the producer there, Nick Raskolinis out of Nashville there, he pretty much sat them down and said, your strongest albums were your first three, and we're going to try to channel the energy that you had on those first three albums. And then when they found Eric, you know, that set the whole tone, I guess.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the first three, because so many people kind of overlook the third album. You know, they always,
I love Subhuman Race. I think it was an exciting place. Subhuman Race was a good album.
Yeah.
They were experimenting with some, like, more modern sounds at the time and going heavier on some stuff, and it was really cool. Good record.
That was a strange time, because some bands did that and it didn't work at all, and then other bands, you know, did and it worked, you know. So I mean, they were one of the cases where I think it worked, and but this new album is fantastic. But yeah, it's not a bad time if you want some good hard rock and metal. I mean, even Lamb of God's Omens. I mean, a lot of veteran bands put out some really good stuff. And Machine Head has a
Trivium
pretty solid one, new one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Machine Head album. I went and saw them live recently, and they were just incredible. That was the first time I'd seen them live probably in, you know, almost 20 years, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
They were great.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff out there. Just go find it.
Mm-hmm.
Go find
Absolutely.
It. Go see it. Go support it. If you love it, buy the T-shirt. You know, because that's where the bands are really making their money on it. You know,
buy Zero King albums and gift them to your friends. So buy multiple copies. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I always encourage folks to do. And Holly, do you have anything more to ask Andy before we wrap the show up tonight?
Gosh, is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to talk about?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, we pretty much talked about the new record, told everybody to go check that out, the video for Back Off, the lyric video for Dead or Dancing, the new music that's going to be coming, the covers. And we're writing stuff for the next album release right now, too. So, you know, we've always got our eye on what that next thing is, you know.
Right.
Well,
right.
We've talked about production, live shows, everything. We talked about songwriting. We covered the industry.
Yeah, in the next few days, I'll have a graphic that I'll be putting out there that'll have all our tour dates, and that'll be the header on the Facebook page. So just come to the Facebook page. You'll see all the dates, and then we're adding new stuff all the time. So
send me a copy of that, and I'll put it in our channels.
Hopefully we'll see you in March. Yeah, hopefully we'll get to see you in March. And
I do have
one last question. I do have a question, though. Who were some of your earliest influences, like when you started listening to rock and roll, you know, as a kid? I mean, who were some of your early influences?
Sure. So one of the first things I remember is hearing the beginning of the Back in Black album, you know, the Hell's Bells and all that. That had a pretty profound you know, that record had a profound influence for sure. Kiss, Destroyer was another one. I remember hearing that on, like, my cousin's 8-track player. And one of the first bands I got into, and you'll get a kick out of this, Steve, is Quiet Riot Mental Health. And Friday,
absolutely,
I've got an interview with Chaotic Riffs, which is out of California. It's a YouTube Zoom show. And we're going to be discussing the 40th anniversary of Mental Health and the influence that record had on me and on metal in general. Twisted Sister was a huge influence early on. Of course, Metallica. A little later, bands like Korn, White Zombie, Marilyn Manson, and pop stuff along the way. You know, Duran Duran, Rio was really big with me. Michael Jackson, Thriller, of course, Guns N' Roses, NXS, and I liked a lot of the power pop stuff along the way. Bands like Jellyfish. A huge shout out to all the stuff that Butch Walker's done over the years. Marvelous Three, all his solo stuff, and I don't know, Joe Jackson. I'm all over the place. I always kind of think that kind of what sets me apart in a lot of ways is I can do the heavy vocal, but there's always a sense of melody in what I'm doing, and I come at it from like a classic pop kind of delivery and sound, even if it's in a metal context or whatever. To me, it always kind of feels like, you know, if it doesn't feel like pop, I don't think it's a Zero King song. Even though we get heavy and we're definitely, you know, there's a lot of metal in what we do and a lot of hard rock, but yeah, I think we kind of come from those influences that wrote big arena songs, Motley Crue, you know, Guns N' Roses, just those kind of things. I that's probably answered.
You're a fellow Kiss fan, I know that.
Well, like I said, Destroyer. Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing the beginning of Detroit Rock City and being like, "What is this?" Yeah. You know.
Yeah, me too. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh man, good times. Good times. Yeah.
And Queen. Queen was another big
Uh-oh.
One. Yeah.
You just won Holly over.
Oh yeah.
You just won Holly over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was big in the Queen. And during Holly various stages of my life, I've gotten more into certain eras of Queen as a, you know, like you always kind of discover stuff with that band. And there's a lot of bands like that, like that have huge catalogs where you only hear the popular songs, but if you go back and listen to all those records, it's like, oh, you're going to find some like gems on there that you didn't even know existed or whatever. I mean, Thin Lizzy's another band like that for me. Like, you know, I think growing up, I probably when your boys are back in town and Jailbreak, but you go back and listen to those records, and it's like, man, they couldn't – Phil Lynott could not write a bad song. It just was impossible. Everything he did was amazing.
And the guys in the aftermath, too, of as far as like Black Star writers, there's some good stuff on those albums, too. Yeah.
I love Ricky Warwick's voice. I've liked him since, like, the days of Almighty. So, you know.
Right, yeah.
Almighty was a really cool band.
Good stuff. But very excited about American Savior. I'm hoping this is the breakout album for you guys. I definitely do.
Mean, we're having more success right out of the gate with a record than we've ever had. So, we're trying to put the right team in place to, you know, to help us get it out there even more. So,
nice. All right, Andy. Well, that ends on a high note for us, and I have enjoyed the heck out of this interview. We've covered so much. If you think about everything we talked about, we've run the gamut for sure, and I knew we would, but fantastic talking to you tonight. And, if you want to make a last comment, and then Holly, if you want to do the honors to take us out. It's been a great show, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
It has been a great show. I appreciate you guys having me on, and I'd love to come back anytime. And hopefully we can all get together at an Imaginarium.
I hope that works
out,
definitely.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. And
well, thank you for having me.
Everybody out there, check us out next week, Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest, another great combo, another great evening. We will see you then. Good night.